You are listening to We the People Radio again.
Once again. We're back.
And so it's fun. We have substitute hosts next week. They're going to be talking about some local issues and some recall information. And I think you guys will like it. We've got to go hang out with the Kubota Tractor folks. So
yeah, we're going to be down in Phoenix enjoying a little warm weather. We haven't had enough of it.
That's a lie. We're not going to be enjoying it at all. It's horrible.
No, it's not.
I wanted to go to like Nashville or Atlanta.
That would have been nice.
I know. I wanted to go somewhere fun. Anyway.
There's nothing wrong with the kidnapping capital of the world.
I know. And it's hot. Did I mention that? It's going to be hot again.
Yeah.
So anyway, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Yeah, we should get that out of the way before I forget. And you can find all of our information, past shows, information about today's show, archives. We've got a ton of archives. And we do archive them commercial free. We do like to honor capitalism during the program, but then we get rid of the capitalism for you after the fact. All the music's still in there, though, and that's obviously worth listening to twice. So you can find that all at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got two different things going on today. We will have Chuck Floyd, who is the Chief Executive Officer, and Bruce Moran, who's the National Security Advisor for Security Solutions Technologies. We've had Bruce on more times than Chuck, but we have had Chuck on before, and I'll link those past shows. Easier for me to say. Security Solutions Technology, there we go, is a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, and security assessments. They do cybersecurity, geospatial, program and lifecycle management, change management, logistics, and financial consulting. Some of those things, I don't even know what that means. But they provide performance
it's
and results-based.
That's all you need to know.
Well, the important part is they provide a performance and results-based culture.
There you are.
Ah, go figure that out.
Uh-huh.
That's
results.
That's probably super confusing for the government.
They're still in the planning stages.
So we're going to catch up on like border wall, national security, all that good stuff. So we had a little scramble here at the first, but do we have everybody on?
This is Chuck. I'm here.
Hiya, Chuck.
Hello, Chuck.
Thanks for coming back.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure. We really need to talk about border security and what President Trump's trying to do and what Mitch McConnell and several Republicans and Democrats are trying not for him to do.
Yes. Let's get to the bottom of that. What's real and what's not? Because obviously most of what we hear, you know, on network news and all that is, if we don't know it's made up at the time, we find out later it was fictional.
I think we all want to believe they're going to build a wall. Tell me it's true.
Well, I have no faith in Mitch McConnell getting anything done. You know, to me, he's been the worst Senate leader in the history of our republic. We've written articles about him, and I don't know why. Trump's supposed to have a meeting with him tomorrow and read him the riot act and say, hey, Mitch, get on board or get out. So hopefully he's going to start getting on board. We have hundreds and probably up to 1,000 political appointees, myself, many others, who are ready to go serve and support the president. We can't get in because the Senate won't vote on the undersecretaries, and I talked to Ted Cruz last week, and they have 160, I believe it was, judicial nominees that can't get a vote. And so, Mitch McConnell, what are you doing? Where are you?
Now, is that unusual for it to take this long when a new president comes in to have...
No, it is not. I was on the Bush transition team, then I went to work for Bush as a presidential appointee at State Department, which I hope to do, go back under Trump and help him at State Department also. But that is not normal. When I was at the transition team, we were vetting people to go into the administration, and within 6 to 9 months, we had thousands of people in. And then, because what you have to do is get your secretaries, and you have to get your undersecretaries, and then so all the people that have to be approved by the Senate have to go through the confirmation and then the voting. That's key. Then once they get into the different agencies, then they can then bring in their people that do not have to go in front of the Senate, and that moves very quickly. And so most of the senior appointees have been identified. They're ready to go. But the Senate for some reason, it's just not doing anything. For an example, I attended a hearing over a month ago for Eric Ulan, who is supposed to be the Undersecretary of Management at the State Department. They still haven't voted on him. You look at the deputy for OMB. That was over 2 months ago, and they still haven't voted on that person. So, Mitch McConnell, wake up, do your job.
So is this because, I mean, what a lot of people are hearing is, well, the Democrats are blocking everything.
But that's legislation.
That's legislation.
They can have a bare majority now.
Well,
right?
The Democrats, if Mitch McConnell would do his job, and if he has to change a rule, he change a rule. But there have been Republicans that have been in opposition. You know, the hearing I went to for Eric Ulan, Corker was the chairman. And now Corker is in a dispute with Trump and going back and forth. And so he's not getting anything done. And so Republicans are to blame along with the Democrats. And Mitch McConnell has to do his job and get things moving.
Hmm. Yeah. And then we're not even going to go on the John McCain trail.
I know it.
God, it's like, don't get us started.
That's a whole another half-hour subject of ACA and various sundry things that we talk about.
Hi, Bert.
As we're looking at border security, Chuck has been working on that. I don't know. We've been working on it for 12, 14 years. It's called Secure America's Borders Act, which helped President Trump get started. Gave him his legs. He didn't have to have legislation passed for the border. So it's called the Secure America's Borders Act. Chuck was the main principal in that with Senator Frisk, and I was involved with that to get it off the ground. What we're looking at is how and when and where will this get going, and Chuck submitted several plans, but we can talk generally about the what it's going to do, how it's going to be best suited to help protect the borders. Chuck, you want to weigh in on the beginning of that, and I'll weigh in during the middle?
Yeah, absolutely. We have been giving the Trump administration, even before Trump started running, I was working with him, and I gave him a lot of information on the border security plan, on the immigration plan, and everything you see in the 70-point plan, we provided information for. And then Heritage Foundation, Judicial Watch, FAIR, a lot of other organizations have also moved in. So if this is Trump going natural as far as deal making. And so if you go back and look a few weeks ago when he brought Nancy and Chuck Schumer in and talked to them about DACA and what they would do and whatever, and then they went and go, hey, we got a deal. Well, you really don't have a deal. And so now Trump is the deal maker, where he has put the Democrats on pure defensive for DACA. And so if Trump does not get funding for the wall, if he doesn't get the immigration pass like he did in his recent 70-point plan, no DACA whatsoever. And so, the carrot and the stick. And so right now, the Democrats are saying, hey, we're not going to work with you on anything. And if you look at what happened with Nancy Pelosi, her people out in San Francisco just berated her and forced her to just leave the meeting that she had.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was. And so Trump is setting everything up. He's the deal maker. And so he's setting it up where he will get funding for the wall. He doesn't need to really do a whole lot with Congress and have them authorize a whole lot of money for the wall. He's got plenty of money in the DHS budget to start the wall, to get things rolling. If you go back and look at what Obama did, he diverted DHS funding from ICE, from CBP, Coast Guard, and all the other agencies at DHS to accept all these DACA kids and families and then fly them all over the U.S. And we provide all of the social things, from food stamps and phones and all these other things, and all that came out of the DHS funding and was never authorized. And so I've sent in information to the administration where you can build a wall. You can start it right away. But Trump is the deal maker. He is the expert at it, and he's putting pressure on the Democrats and the liberal Republicans right now in order to get this accomplished.
Yes, and we're trying to look at the rules and regs as they relate to, as you know, it's been in the new sanctuary cities, and that's DACA and criminal activity. One of the things Chuck and I had reiterated earlier is that what's really not being expressed is the inhumane treatment of people coming across the border, the rapes, the sick kids sold as sex slaves, all the stuff that the media is not addressing, we always address because that's part and parcel to what needs to be done to protect the human rights of people. It's basically how do you protect the human rights of people. And first of all, we're trying to protect the U.S. citizens. And part of the border security and the refugee crisis is to identify who can be problems in the United States. As you know, we added on three more countries. And the Supreme Court ruled in our favor just a week ago. So they knocked out. I think there's one left from Hawaii that he had objection to the refugee situation. Now we're clear and free on that. Now we're moving towards understanding how to get a better handle on counterterrorism, on the terrorist activity in the United States, and how to deal with closing the borders down to protect U.S. citizens, and how the U.S. citizens can best be prepared to handle a crisis. And now you're handling crisis with the hurricanes, with the wildfires,
right.
And now we have all these other, sundry things that are going on. They're taking monies away from the budget. But the budget is appropriated, like Chuck was saying, to handle a border to be built.
All right, hang on, fellas. We've got to take a quick break. And as we head to that break, I'm going to post this news article. But there's one of the DACA people, people always say, oh, they're the best citizens we have. They contribute, blah, blah, blah. Except for one of them is with a nice tattoo on his neck, always attractive. He's a 19-year-old accused of murder, kidnapping, and possession of a weapon during a violent crime in connection with the death of 18-year-old Diana Martinez Gonzalez in South Carolina.
That's
she
right.
was a high school student.
That's right.
So there we go. For all those people that have heard DACA recipients have a zero crime rate.
Well, MS-13 recruits from DACA,
right.
too.
Well, I can tell you, yeah. So there's at least one that's a bad guy as of today. We'll be right back Chuck and with Bruce.
Okay.
Putting your hands in your head.
Yeah.
So nice instead of handcuffs.
Whoever came up with a dreamer.
It's like handcuff you.
I know.
They need to be deported.
Feels like we're not ever using the word dreamer. Then out comes the song, Chase Louise.
Yeah.
All right, boys.
It's inculcated into the culture now, those ideas that they want to present to minimize, the culture, to minimize the effect of, the Constitution and various sundry things that go along with it. I would say even the national anthem and the flag. So even see that happening in our football stadiums and the basketball court.
Well, don't forget the part about how anybody who raises any questions about this, like the fact that this guy actually held another girl captive. I read further in the article. He held another girl captive, and she was the one who turned him in. So I think this is a pretty solid case. And yet, just the fact that we're talking about it makes us haters. So it's ridiculous.
Just recently in Montgomery County, Maryland, right outside of D.C., we had two DACA high school kids rape a 13-year-old girl at school.
My gosh.
Again, when the Democrats saying they need to protect their children and all this, a lot of these young adults were present by their families by themselves, and so they are young men and older, and so and again, a lot of them are joining gangs and just causing havoc. Northern Virginia, the crime has gone up drastically. But if you look at Trump's 70-point immigration policy priorities, there are three different areas. One is border security, one is interior enforcement, and one is merit-based immigration system. And so he's told the Democrats and the Republicans, I want those three things first, and guess what? DACA is now fourth. And so
President Trump
is the deal maker, and so he's putting this together where this thing is going to fall in place, forcing the border security and interior enforcement, the merit-based immigration, or the comprehensive plan prior to anything for DACA. And if you look at his border security plan, the second point, which I would like to talk about, is that the Department of Homeland Security can raise and collect fees from visa services and border crossings to fund border security and enforcement activities. Guess what? That tells me Mexico is paying for the wall.
Oh. That's good. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
So how the 70-point plan that he is proposing, how is that going over in the Senate? I mean, I don't think it's going to have a problem in the House, but what's the prognosis in the Senate, do you think?
Well, I think it's going to have a tough time in the Senate because of the Rhino Republicans. And you look at McCain and all the rest of the individuals that say, oh, we have to have bipartisanship. Well, guess what? When Obama was president, there wasn't any bipartisanship. Everything was forced down our throat.
But so, the thing is, if McCain votes for it, we do have bipartisanship because he's not really actually a Republican.
That's a good point. And so what I've suggested to the White House and to the administration is that President Trump needs to get out on the stump more, and every 2 weeks he needs to give the American people a fireside chat as what's going on, who's doing what, and name names in the Senate for people to call and say, this senator is not doing his or her job. Let's go after that senator, and this is what we need to do. So the White House really has to step up their PR game in order to make sure that the president is supported by the Republican Party. If the Republican Party supported him on this immigration and border security, along with Obamacare, along with the debt ceiling, along with the tax plan, the Iran negotiation, the Republicans would be in majority for 50 years because this is what the American people want. And
this is what our country is based upon.
Like McConnell,
this is how we grew up and how people become economically free to do what they to raise their families. This is not anything unusual that President Trump is introducing. He's just bringing us back to our roots in what I guess we can say the Heritage Foundation, because we can talk about Ed Foner and Ed Misu help us out, are great behind backing this kind of program because this is the traditional American family. This is who we are and what we've done and what's been successful. What hasn't been successful are the programs that have been out there for 20, 30 years that have been given to people and they entitle them to things. And it takes away from the structure of the economy. It takes away from the economy growing. It doesn't create jobs.
But
and that's, the basic foundation of how we grew up and what we believe in our work ethic.
But isn't that really the basis of the Democrats' angst is you can't take all this away. These people have had it for so long. You can't take it away from them now.
They're Americans.
They deserve it.
They don't know anything about their country. They grew up here.
Yeah, how do you counter that? Because they always go back to that.
It's like, I've been living in your house since you went away on vacation. You can't come back in.
Yeah, that's right.
I deserve it.
Well, the same attitude, the people that come into the country from the South, on the border, from the South American countries to Mexico, think they're entitled to things, too.
Yeah.
And that's what the refugees do. Once they get here, they're entitled to things. No, that's not what American citizenry is about. It's about to contribute to your society and to become part of society and assimilate. The most important question that should be asked is assimilation. What do you want to do to be part of our society and to contribute to our society? It's not to get the handouts and just to live and to, you know, do what you did in your other country. There's nothing wrong with that, you know what I'm saying? But on the other hand, you got to be part of society and, you know, help out. Make sure you're working, make sure you're raising your kids and, you know, they're going to school, they're not becoming criminals, they're, you know, taking part in the entire structure. What I'm talking about is they're working in community organizations and voicing their opinions. Now, we're talking about so many different things here. I want to get back to maybe something on the national security front that just came across the view this week, which was Iran.
Bruce, let me make one more point on the border plan, and then we get into Iran. You know, the third item that President Trump said in his 70-point immigration plan is merit-based immigration system, where we end family chain migration and we end the green cards and all the other access of individuals coming into our country, and we force them and their employers to be totally responsible for them, where they receive no social benefits. And so we have to really get a handle on the social benefits in this country. I'm going to give you an example here in Florida. After the hurricane, DHS was giving out, I think it was like $900 and some per person for food and different things, which is fine. But again, a lot of people didn't need it. And so they just said, hey, government's giving away. I'm going to go standing line. I'm going to get my card and get free meals, you know, $900 and some. And so I'm going, yeah, wow. You know, how do we do this? You know, how do you qualify people for this, these sort of things? It's just unbelievable. And it's just giving money out and there's nothing in return.
Well, if you're going to give it away to citizens. You know, this giving it away to anybody that wants to knock on the door and come in,
preference to citizens. I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean.
If you look at education, and we bring this up all the time because I hear this from coworkers, they have kids applying to college, but because their parents went to college, so they check that box, they're not a minority, they're just, you know, they don't make a lot of money. They don't have cable TV. They don't have enough money for that, but they have more than, you know, somebody who's living on welfare, so they're entitled to zip while these other guys get a free ride, and they're not even citizens of the country.
That is true. I mean, it's unbelievable how the Democrats have changed the rules that we go by because they want new voters. That's the only reason.
No, you're absolutely right. But if you look at, you know, they say, oh, well, the, you know, the U.S. level of poverty is so much higher than anywhere else in the world.
How many people in poverty have cell phones in 80?
Exactly. But I'll also say, if you want to go, you know, into the deep south, I mean, there's a lot of places in the country where you have true poverty. I mean, kids that, you know, don't get enough to eat, don't have clothes. I mean, there's plenty of places to have programs like that for people that are, you know, citizens. I just,
saying, we're not a failed state, a third world country, a developing country. We have all the benefits of a middle class that are given to our people we consider poor.
Right.
And when I travel abroad, I'm amazed at what people think of what poor is. You know, our poor here are, you know, would be middle class, you know.
Oh, sure.
Some places else.
Sure. No, I agree.
One of the things
I like about Trump's plan is with the Interior Enforcement, they're going to force everybody to use e-verbal.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
It's an option.
Yes.
Everybody is going to be forced to use it, and so. And then, so one, the other thing is that we're in the plan, they can go after employers who employ illegals. And what I'd like, also like to see is that the Justice Department should be able to go after the politicians that do not abide by the law.
Yeah, totally agree.
Let's
face it, E-Verify would completely just hammer that down. It'd make all the rest of it just so much cleaner. We've got to take a really quick break again, and we're going to come back. And then national security? No, we're talking, Iran. Is that our next stop, fellas? I can't believe you're only on here for an hour. We already don't have enough time. It's not even done yet. We'll be back with Bruce and with Chuck Floyd here and chat about Iran a little bit. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
To Fernando.
Referring to the House of Representatives.
Yes, exactly. We've got to give the Senate away. We need to give them to somebody who can whip them into shape. All right, so what do you guys have for us on Iran?
Okay, Bruce, you want to go in and talk about Iran, and then I'll chime in after what you say.
Sure. The Iran deal goes back many years, if you recall. Do you recall President Jimmy Carter? Operation Eagle Claw. We went to rescue the hostages.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And who became famous during that time every night?
Ted Koppel.
Yeah, Ted Koppel.
Oh, very good.
And nice call, Bob.
365 Iran hostage crisis, ABC News Nightline.
That's right.
It's finally done in series. You know, Ted Koppel.
Every night.
Really did, brought him into fame, but also gave us a handle on how to see what's going on. What happened in Operation Eagle Claw is that the transport was there that transported the helicopters, and one of the helicopters crashed into transport, killing 8 servicemen. So we had a problem. Some of the dust storms were, when they come in, the sandstorms were up to knee deep. So you couldn't get things off the ground. The dust would get into, and the sand would get into the, you know, props. Some of the blades broke, and so they just canceled that. So subsequent to that time, we basically took the money from Iran. It came to about $12 billion. And that's what they had with the deal that is today, 28 years later. And how was that deal handled? Who handled it? And you heard about the cash going over to Iran. You know, that
right.
was...
pallets.
Drug cartel you know. Style.
Yeah, it's 400, you know... million dollars.
And
$1.5 billion.
You can't send the cash. Yeah. Why can't you send the cash? Because Congress says you can't send the cash. So they converted it into euros. And then they dropped it off in Iran. So they circumvented Congress. You know, you can't exchange hostages for cash. So they did that. And then they're also doing the deal at the same time for what? The ballistic missiles. So all that was going down at the same time. And who was the head of the Senate committee at the time? Who was the chair?
Ooh, Bob, you got that one? I was busy registering as a Republican at that time.
Are we talking 1979 here?
No. And during the Obama administration.
No. Oh!
It was Bob Corker.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened during that time? And the Republicans really upset with him. He changed to pass the law to get them the sanctions and went down to get the deal done and went down to 50 instead of the 60.
Mm.
That's when he started taking flack. So if you see flak coming back from President Trump to Corker, it could be about the original Rand deal.
I heard somewhere the other day somebody was saying he changed it so it only needed like a 36 vote approval.
Whatever happened, Corker changed the rules and it gave the president the go-ahead to do the Iran deal in the four or five faceted way he had it done.
Now, why would Corker do that?
Oh, I have no idea.
I mean,
whatever the deals were and his idea about, he's head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and what they were doing with the Democrats and how what was being done through negotiations and strategies and how they thought ballistic missiles would be part of that program and there'd be proper inspections. And as we know from 1979 on, what has grown in power and strength? Iran.
Iran. And all the bad guys that they've been supporting. Sure.
If we had this deal done, 28 years later, well, it goes back 2 years, so that's 25 years, 26 years later, what has changed? That was President Trump's main argument. Nothing has changed. We got to change the way business is being done on our foreign policy and our national security. This deal was a bad deal. That's what he's saying. So you can see what I'm saying is what he's saying, but he understood it. That was part of his platform when he's running for the presidency.
So do they have any grounds? I mean, if they do throw this deal out, does Iran really have, they're saying that they're going to, rain terror and all that. They already are. So, is there really anything?
What happens is every 90 days it goes back into reconsideration by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Senate can do is maybe impose more sanctions or reintroduce what they feel is necessary to have proper and fitting national security for the United States.
But there isn't anything Iran can really do, over and above what they're already doing, is there?
No, No. It's what we can do, and what inspections can be done on the ground that aren't being done. That's
right.
What I'm saying.
Okay.
Here's an example.
Chuck's trying to get a word in, but your voice is soft, Chuck.
They're developing ballistic
missiles. He's not hearing you.
Okay. And we also see them being shot over Japan. But to the degree we know where they're at, are we allowed unfettered access? The answer is no.
Okay, Chuck. Chuck, go ahead.
If you go back to where Obama came in, the first day he was in office, Valerie Jarrett, who is Iranian, started talking to the Iranians behind the scenes to put this deal together. And if you look at when Obama gave Iran the $1.5 billion in cash, which is illegal in the United States because we track all funding across the world for terror organizations. When he gave them that money, what happened in North Korea? North Korea started doing test after test after test. And so North Korea and Iran are working together, and whatever technology they find in North Korea and update, they're doing this, they're giving all that stuff to Iran. So that $1.5 billion and other billions of dollars that Obama has given Iran is funding North Korea, it's funding Iran, it's funding Hezbollah, and it's going to tear up the Middle East. This morning, General McMaster was on Fox News talking about Iran and what Trump is doing. And so he says that President Trump understands the strategic plan of the Iranian deal, where most people only look at it as a tactical plan. And so President Trump has now indicated that he's not going to go along with it because it's the worst deal ever, because they even do self-inspection. We don't even go in there. The IAEA doesn't even go in there. And so the master said this morning that what they want to do is go have Congress do their job again, just like health care, just like taxes. President Trump is for saying that he's going to decertify. He's pushed this back to Congress and told them they have 60 days to work on this thing. And so, again, what is Mitch McConnell going to do? They have to do something or it's going to be decertified, which it should be because it's illegal and it was never agreed to by the Congress.
But they've already got the money, so there's really not much we can do on that front, is there?
No, not really. The only thing we can do, which I doubt they even kept the serial numbers of the bills so they couldn't be tracked, because they, right now they have hundreds of millions of dollars going into Lebanon, the Hezbollah, or whatever, and the Israelis are tracking that. So they're supporting the war in Syria. They're using this cash all over the world to implement their terrorist policies and to fight the U.S. on every front.
Oh, boy.
Jeez Louise. Okay, on that happy note, I'm sorry. Take our last celebration of capitalism. We'll come back and finish up with you guys till the top of the hour. Can't celebrate too much capitalism, especially when we're talking about Iran.
Yeah.
Bummer. You have anything funny for us, Bob? Oh, good. Bob's got something funny, so we don't have to eat blood pressure medication on the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
When the world is on your shoulder, gotta straighten up your act and boogie down. If you can't hang with the feeling, then there ain't no room for you in this part of town. Cause we're the party people night and day. Living crazy, that's the only way. So tonight, gotta leave the 9-to-5 up on the shelf and just enjoy yourself. Let the medicine, the music get to you. Life ain't so bad at all.
You live it off the wall.
Life ain't so bad.
Political correctness has gone wild. That's us.
No borders.
Yeah. If it is. We only ever hear the beginning of the song. I guess the rest is fun too. All right, fellas, on that happy note.
That was humor circa 1980, back in the day.
Back in the day when we could joke about things like that.
Yep.
So we know you guys probably aren't allowed to laugh, so we'll laugh for you.
I have to give President Trump a ton of credit because he's dealing with, he must be in the national security room talking to everybody all the time with everything going on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had the hurricanes, we had the forest fires, we have the Afghanistan situation, the Iraq situation, the missiles flying over Japan. I mean, there's not a time for him to rest. And we're dealing also with, you know, some of the crisis we still feel is, you know, predominant in Iraq itself. We're dealing with the Assyrian Christians, too. So there's a lot of stuff going on here that has to be addressed, and people's attention is being swayed, and I guess they're being, I would call it psychologically numb. There's so much going on. There's so much brutality. You go in Las Vegas, and you just, there's too much to deal with for most people.
You know, if you listen to the media, NBC, ABC, those kind of stations, they go, President Trump is doing nothing. He's not accomplishing anything. And then you turn around and look at everything he's doing a tremendous amount of work. And so, he campaigned on what he wanted, and he's doing it. Republicans got to get on board. We got to get their political appointees in to help him. And again, if Mitch McConnell can do his job, then I'd like to see him in a rocking chair at a retirement home in Kentucky.
It's like they're saying he's too focused on the National Football League. Like, no, he's got everybody else focused on the National Football League while he's doing all this other stuff and reworking Obamacare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a bad strategy.
And doing the tax reform, too. I mean, he's pushing everything he said. And we have to have our side of the hill, you know, the Republicans, stand up and be counted. And so far they haven't shown that they had the wherewithal. And that's what's embarrassing to me, because President Trump gets elected and they were on his bootstraps, basically. And then he's asking him to do things, and they're being the old establishment kind of thinkers and going so slow, and then they want to do their own thing. And that's not, if you throw the Democrats in there, Democrats are fully organized and they're doing what they want to do. I mean, they're so much better organized than the Republican Party and getting things done.
Yeah, which is
in,
crazy.
In that way. And it's embarrassing to me, you know. And
it, it is, because their ideas are dopey.
All the people that relied on their health care, and we knew Obamacare failed. Everybody says replace and repeal. Well, it hasn't been done. That's embarrassing in a lot of different ways.
And they can't see that. That's something I really find interesting is you look at the colossal failure of Obamacare, and they still stand behind it.
Well, the people who are standing behind it, though, I mean, I'm going to reiterate just from a work standpoint, because I talk to so many people about Obamacare, and the people who love it are not on it.
Right.
I mean, I might have 1% of the people I come in contact with on a daily basis in the phone and in public, you know, people that are adamant, got to keep Obamacare. Oh, really? Is that how you get your coverage? Oh, no, I'm on Medicare. Or, no, I work for the government, so I'm on some government insurance. And it's like, well,
that's
pretty common. So I'm sorry
to get
that.
It's not a bad deal if you're getting all of the government subsidies and only paying $100 a month
for it.
That's
right. Everyone else is.
As soon as you start making any money yourself, you get hit with the tax bill.
Yeah, the bullet comes.
And the subsidies are gone.
We had a guy last week. His tax bill is $18,900 for his Obamacare subsidy adjustment. It's like, oh, that'll work. Chuck,
President Trump even told Congress he wants them to get off of their special plan and get on Obamacare.
Well, we are on Obamacare. Members of Congress and their staff, I mean, I don't talk about my job on this because I don't do this for work, but full disclosure, I'm on the D.C. exchange. So my network providers are in Virginia, Maryland, and Washington, D.C.,
yep.
So anybody who thinks we have some, you know, there's some like different thing, but instead of paying $2,000, I pay like $850 or something, which is still suckier than when we had to buy our own insurance as self-employed people before, Bill and I.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
all the independent contractors and small businesses are dying and killed.
Oh yeah, it's just sucking the wind out of them.
Country here.
Hey, tell us, go back to Iran just so we don't leave that just hanging. We got like two minutes or three minutes. If they pull out of this deal, you know, they always make it sound like the world's coming to an end. Honestly,
well, no, it's more than what. This is just part of what's going on. They have so many different strategy and tactical laws running through the National Security Council at the UN. This is part of it. This is our part in how we want to affect change. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
other things you can do, but this is the way our Congress can act if you recertify. And that's what Chuck is talking about. Every 90 days we recertify, so get the Senate to act. Senate does this, you know, in terms of foreign policy. The House doesn't do this. So if the Senate acts in accord with what the President wishes, then we can maybe institute some more changes there. And from my personal national security point of view, I want to make sure those inspections are correct. You know, our intelligence on the ground is not good. So,
all right. And then, so Chuck, since it's like kind of a little bit quiet in there. It's just hard to hear you, so you get talked over a lot. What do you have?
We would be better off if we scrap the Iran deal and renegotiated the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, because we need more sanctions. I mean, Obama didn't put any sanctions. He didn't do anything. And so we need more sanctions on them. We need the inspectors on the ground, you know, because they are doing ballistic missiles. They're doing the nuclear tasks and everything else behind the scenes, coordinated with North Korea. So, you know, they're going to have nuclear weapons sooner under this deal than they ever would. But under Trump, the Iranians know that he is serious, and they know that he will cancel this thing, and so we need to keep the pressure up on them. You know, two other issues that really nobody talks about is Mueller. You know, his whole special investigation was based on fake news, and you know, he's all over the map. And he's not even looking at the Russians. He's looking at Trump and other things. And so, because it's nothing there. Then the other big thing is Louie Gohmert is doing, Congressman Louie Gohmert is doing investigation now on Desi Raman Schultz, IT guy, who stole all kinds of information. He was in Pakistan. He put, you know, his whole family.
The Awan brothers.
She allowed him to put his family on different member staff. And she told these other congressmen and women, they're going to be on there, and you're going to pay them what I tell you to do. And, you know, they've made millions and millions of dollars.
Six million, to be exact.
The investigation is not going away.
No, hey, we haven't heard the last of that.
You guys, we totally appreciate having you on. And you know what? I would love to do a whole show on the Awan brothers and that whole thing and unpack that for people. Because it has been an amazing, amazing story to follow.
Well, thanks for coming on, guys. We really
appreciate
it.
Thanks a million. We're going to do this again.
I wrote an article and gave it to the White House back in January of 17 on the Awan brothers.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, let's do a show on that. That would be magical. Dear God, that's my favorite story.
Covering the cybersecurity side of it, and it's an atrocity.
Oh, okay.
And they had access to
I'm emailing you.
That's a whole...
Get your calendars out. We're going to email here during the news.
Yes, we specialize in atrocities.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Three cheers for Security Solutions Technology. Bruce and Chuck, we love these guys. They're full of information. We will be right back. We're going to chat with Ryan Morrow about Trump's UN speech and what it does to the Islamist ideology. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.